Welcome to Scary Bedtime Stories. I'm your host, Jose, and I will be your guide, your Morpheus into the world of dreams. The goal of this podcast is to help you fall asleep by relaxing you, taking your restless mind off your problems, and help you get the rest that you deserve while I read to you a horror classic. I promise it won't be too scary. If the podcast helps you sleep, please leave me a review, tell a friend, and subscribe. Also, check out my other podcast, Technically a Conversation, where I go over a lot of dark and weird stories with my lovely co-hosts, Isela and Elena. This week, we'll be talking about the Stanley Cup craze that has taken over the country. It was one of our funniest episodes. A link will be in the show notes, or go to technicallyaconversation.com. We're going to tune out the outside world. That's the gentle rain and music you hear in the background. Hopefully, that'll be enough to drown out your neighbor's barking dog and all the noisy neighborhood sounds plotting to keep you awake tonight. Put the episode on repeat or make a playlist of several episodes while we wait for the Sandman to come. Every time you find your mind drifting away, focus on the story. With all that out of the way, let's get started. Make yourself comfortable in your bed. Flip that pillow around to the cool side and relax your breathing. Smear some Vicks under your nose and focus on how soft and cool your sheets are. Today, I'll be reading you The Conjurer by Richard Middleton. Certainly, the audience was restive. In the first place, it felt that it had been defrauded, seeing that Sissy Bradford, whose smiling face adorned the bills outside, had failed to appear. And secondly, it considered that the deputy for that famous lady was more than inadequate. To the little man who sweated in the glare of the limelight and juggled desperately with glass balls in a vain effort to steady his nerve, it was apparent that his turn was a failure. And as he worked, he could have cried with disappointment, for his was a trial performance, and a year's engagement in the Hennings group of music halls would have rewarded success. Yet, his tricks, things that he had done with the utmost ease a thousand times, had been a succession of blunders, rather mirth-provoking than mystifying to the audience. Presently, one of the glass balls fell crashing on the stage, and amidst the jeers of the gallery, he turned to his wife, who served as his assistant. "I've lost my chance," he said with a sob. "I can't do it." "Never mind, dear," she whispered. "There's a nice steak and onions at home for supper." "It's no use," he said despairingly. "I'll try the disappearing trick and then get off. I'm done here." He turned back to the audience. "Ladies and gentlemen," he said to the mockers in a wavering voice, "I will now present to you the concluding item of my entertainment. I will cause this lady to disappear under your eyes, without the aid of any mechanical contrivance or artificial device." This was the merest showman's patter, for, as a matter of fact, it was not a very wonderful illusion. But as he led his wife forward to present her to the audience, the conjurer was wondering whether the mishaps that had ruined his chances would meet him even here. If something should go wrong, he felt his wife's hand tremble in his, and he pressed it tightly to reassure her. He must make an effort of will, and then no mistakes would happen. For a second, the lights danced before his eyes, then he pulled himself together. If an earthquake should disturb the curtains and show Molly creeping ignominiously away, behind he would still meet his fate like a man. He turned round to conduct his wife to the little alcove from which she should vanish. She was not on the stage. For a minute, he did not guess the greatness of the disaster. Then he realized that the theater was intensely quiet and that he would have to explain that the last item of his program was even more of a fiasco than the rest. Owing to a sudden indisposition, his skin tinged at the thought of the hooting. His tongue rasped upon cracking lips as he braced himself and bowed to the audience. Then came the applause. Again and again, it broke from all over the house, while the curtain rose and fell, and the conjurer stood on the stage, mute, uncomprehending. What had happened? At first he thought they were mocking him, but it was impossible to misjudge the nature of the applause. Besides, the stage manager was allowing him call after call, as if he were a star. When at length the curtain remained down and the orchestra struck up the opening bars of the next song, he staggered off into the wings as if he were drunk. There he met Mr. James Hennings himself. "You'll do," said the great man. "That last trick was neat. You ought to polish up the others, though. I suppose you wouldn't want to tell me how you did it. Well, well, come in the morning and we'll fix up a contract." And so, without having said a word, the conjurer found himself hustled off by the vaudeville Napoleon. Mr. Henning had something more to say to his manager. "Bit rum," he said. "Did you see it? Queerest thing we've struck. How was it done, do you think? Can't imagine. There 1 minute on his arm, gone the next. No trap or curtain or anything. Money in it, eh? Biggest hit of the century, I should think. I'll go and fix up a contract and get him to sign it tonight. Get on with it." And Mr. James Hennings fled to his office. Meanwhile, the conjurer was wandering in the wings with the drooping heart of a lost child. What had happened? Why was he a success? And why did people stare so oddly? And what had become of his wife? When he asked them, the stagehands laughed and said they had not seen her. Why should they laugh? He wanted her to explain things and hear their good luck, but she was not in her dressing room. She was not anywhere. For a moment, he felt like crying. Then, for the second time that night, he pulled himself together. After all, there was no reason to be upset. He had to feel very pleased about the contract, however it had happened. It seemed that his wife had left the stage in some queer way without being seen. Probably to increase the mystery, she had gone straight home in her stage dress and had succeeded in dodging the stage door keeper. It was all very strange. But, of course, there must be some simple explanation like that. He should take a cab home and find her there already. There was a steak and onions for supper. As he drove along in the cab, he became convinced that his theory was right. Molly had always been clever, and this time she had certainly succeeded in surprising everybody. At the door of his house, he gave the cabman a shilling for himself with a light heart. He could afford it now. He ran up the steps cheerfully and opened the door. The passage was quite dark, and he wondered why his wife hadn't lit the gas. "Molly?" he cried. "Molly?" The small, weary-eyed servant came out of the kitchen on a savory wind of onions. "Hasn't Mrs. come home with you, sir?" she said. The conjurer thrust his hand against the wall to steady himself, and the pattern of the wallpaper seemed to burn his fingertips. "Not here," he gasped at the frightened girl. "Then where is she? Where is she?" "I don't know, sir," she began stuttering, but the conjurer turned quickly and ran out of the house. Of course, his wife must be at the theater. It was absurd ever to have supposed that she could leave the theater in her stage dress unnoticed, and now she was probably worrying because he had not waited for her. How foolish he had been. It was a quarter of an hour before he found the cab, and the theater was dark and empty when he got back to it. He knocked at the stage door, and the night watchman opened it. "My wife," he cried. "There's no one here now, sir," the man answered respectfully, for he knew that a new star had risen that night. The conjurer leaned against the fair post faintly. "Take me up to the dressing rooms," he said. "I want to see whether she has been there while I was away." The watchman led the way along the dark passages. "I shouldn't worry if I were you, sir," he said. "She can't have gone far." He did not know anything about it, but he wanted to be sympathetic. "God knows," the conjurer muttered. "I can't understand this at all." In the dressing room, Molly's clothes still lay neatly folded as she had left them when they went on stage that night. And when he saw them, his last hope left the conjurer, and a strange thought came into his mind. I should like to go down on the stage, he said, and see if there's anything to tell me of her. The night watchman looked at the conjurer as if he thought he was mad, but he followed him down to the stage in silence. When he was there, the conjurer leaned forward suddenly, and his face was filled with a wistful eagerness. Molly, he called. Molly? But the empty theater gave him nothing but echoes in reply. This concludes The Conjuring by Richard Middleton. Stay tuned for next week's episode, where we'll start a new story. If you enjoyed the podcast and it helped you sleep, don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend, and leave me a review. You can also follow me on all the socials at Scary Bedtime and listen to my other podcast, Technically a Conversation, at technicallyaconversation.com. All the links will be in the show notes. Have a good night.